Welcome to Combox. You can head over to combox.tv and sign up for everything that we have to bring you soon that currently doesn't exist. I started that as an intro and then I was like, I'm not actually sure what I... Just sign up to combox.tv and you'll be on the waiting list for a bunch of cool stuff like beta testing our app and everything else. But this is The Wagon Wheel, the show where I answer your questions on cricket if you've asked them in the way that we need them. Super chats, obviously, if you're watching along live, work very well. But if the best way to get questions in for the show is always via Patreon. So please support us over there at Good Areas Podcasts, and you can find a way through and then ask the questions like Abe has, who says, looking at Suryavanshi's past wagon wheels, he seems very leg side dominant. His go-to seems to be the heave over long on deep mid-wicket, and he also pulls well. It scores minimally on the offside. Abhinav Mukund had a theory that this had to do with his non-traditional way of gripping the bat. My question is, why haven't teams been able to exploit his leg side dominance yet? It actually takes a while, I think, for any player to... especially, I think the attacking players, if you look through history, there's a lot of them out there who come in and are very attacking early on, and it takes a while for teams to kind of work out what to do, because there's an element of shell shock when you're playing against a player like him. What did he make, 50 of 15 balls yesterday, right? When you get a situation where the ball is just flying around your head, flying over your head over and over again, I think there's an issue there. There wasn't actually a great deal of footage on him as well. And I think that the plans at the moment, the two things that we'll see next is we'll see bounces, because his pull shot's fine, but let's see if he could consistently hook with two guys out. So I think we might see that from him. And then the other thing we'll see is just bowling as wide as possible to him with a deep third and a deep backward point. And then I talked about this on the live actually yesterday, with a player between a deep third and a deep backward point, and then another sort of very, almost four guys behind offside, but two in run saving positions that are really catch. In fact, all four of them are catches, but two on the edge of the ring and two on the edge of the rook. Because he's going to swing that bat across the line quite a bit. But yeah, I just think it's very, very early on in someone's development. And it's not that surprising that teams haven't just, like, I think there's always this thing of working it out. People might work out how to bowl to him. That actually might not stop him from being making runs, but it might slow him down for a little while or everything else. But yeah, at the moment, I think the reason I want to bowl wide outside of off stump to him is because I think he'll still try and hit some of those balls to the leg side. And those guys are generally the ones I want to bowl wide outside off stump to. Reece says, say Peterson played on until 2016 in the test team. Does his legacy change much if we average, say, 55, 60? Do you place him higher in the book? I don't think he would have gone on to have Kevin Peterson averaging 55. I just don't think he's that kind of player, Reece. Look, at a certain point, I'm not sure he gets... I mean, if he averages 55, 60, then obviously anyone who makes that extra runs, like, you're talking about a player who what? How many runs would he have had to make at the end of his career then, Reece? I'm trying to work it out mathematically. What does he end up averaging? 47. If you're telling me that late career Kevin Peterson still had a similar kind of impact and then had, what, 2.5 to 3 years, at least two solid years anyway, where he's averaging about 80, then that makes a big change on him. I think the problem with KP is that he made runs in the flat ball era. Flat pitch era, sorry. So he basically made his debut at a really good time, had really good wickets to bat on. There's a couple of small little errors, issues with his career that stop him from being like an elite player. But we know that his impact on a particular test match, you know, and we can go back to people like, you know, Trumper and Viv Richards and, you know, even Roy Fredericks, these sorts of guys that Gordon Greenidge, once they got on a roll like that, even if their strike rates aren't as massive as some of the other really attacking players, their ability is just ridiculous to completely change a game in a short period of time. Sehwag, right? So I think with all that, I think I've got him pretty high anyway. I don't know. I think I've had as many complaints about him being too high as I have having him too low, which I think has got him roughly in the right area. But he does have a relatively short career. And all these things sort of play against you when you're going up against guys who might have had 15 or 16-year careers. So even if he doesn't up his average a little bit, Reece, maybe playing two more years and keeping his average around the same would have also, you know, kept him a little bit higher. But I'm pretty happy with where I have him. I'm trying to remember, is he 42, 43? I'm not going to open the book. Gaggy says, how is ball tampering decided on ground? Is one umpire enough, or do they require two umpires? Is there tampering in league, or will there be, or would there be an ICC fine case just league related? Yeah, so it's if you're caught ball tampering, I believe even if it's in one league, the sort of the demerit points involved carry over to other things. I could be wrong with that, but that was my understanding of it. So if you got caught league to league to league, which I think there might be a player at the moment that might have been done for that. I think there's definitely a situation where that might be an issue. It's generally umpires, it's very rare for umpires to see someone tampering with the ball. Generally what they do is they see that the ball looks unnatural and they either change the ball or they go up to the captain and go, there's no way that this ball could look like this on one side. Right. I know one umpire used to say that quite regularly. Explain to me, when I played cricket for 40 years, how I've never seen a cricket ball look like this before. Right. You know, very plain and very honest. But yeah, it's almost impossible for umpires on the field to catch this. I've said it. I think I might've said it on the live the other day, the best way to actually work it out is to have a camera on the ball at all times. And we could do that. You know, I mean, these things cost money and everything else, but if we actually cared, that's what we do. We don't really care. Miley Cyrus says, do you think the professionalism of having a women's game will lead to women having longer pro careers than men? With lower bowling speeds, I would expect women to have a longer window before their eyes can't track the ball. Until now, it seems that women's retirement has largely been dictated by family dynamics and the needing to actually earn money. It's a fascinating question, Miley Cyrus. Okay, so the first thing I would say is that we have seen that in general, women have left cricket earlier and sport earlier. And as you say, part of that is because of family commitments. Part of that is because sometimes they need to earn money outside. But also that women play a bigger, when you say family dynamics or family commitments, women actually play a bigger role in homemaking than men do across the board, right? And so at a certain point, a man will just keep doing it because it's my job. And a woman will be like, well, actually, is this the best thing for my family at the moment? I actually don't think that changes, that little part of it. The thing about the slower bowling speeds actually might help women have longer careers because they might not be putting the same pressure under themselves as fast bowlers as men do. That's a possibility. I don't know if that's like scientifically backed, but you are bowling slower, so I assume you could bowl for longer. Where I would actually go with this is you talk about how the bowling speeds are slower. Actually, when you get older, as we've talked about before, slower bowling speeds are the things where your average drops quicker. So spinners, you drop quicker than you do with pace bowlers. So I'm not sure that that is going to help women. But yeah, I think once you bring, you know, we're probably only, the problem with women's sport has always been that women develop really early and are quite often involved in when they are in professional sport from the age of 14, 15, 16, right? And so they actually have played on only until 30. We will start to see now players playing on until they're 40 just because it's their main business, right? It's their core competency, as Robbie would put it. So I do think there is a chance with that as well. PJ says, I need to speak to the manager. Don't know who that is. Where the bloody hell is the next series of red ball, white ball trades? I think we just did a white ball trades, didn't we? Is that not up yet? I don't know. I have to talk to Varun. We've done one. I don't want to talk about it too much. It was white ball trades, I think across T20 and one days. We did a lot in that sort of, there's a great sweet spot for white ball trades, I think, around that 2000 sort of section that we found a few. I don't think we did any. And then we've got a bunch more saved up. So there'll be a second white ball trades episode. So I don't know where the first one is, but the second one's coming out. The second one will be recorded as well. It was lots of fun. I mean, it is the most good areas thing we do and the greatest thing we do and the worst thing we do all in one. PJ says, in a recent Crick Pick episode, you mentioned how one of the all-time worst selection decisions was drafting Damian Martin after the 94 Sydney Test match, the Fani de Villiers, even though he had a second top score with 59 in the first dig. Off the top of your head, what are some of the other candidates for worst selection decisions of all time? I'll go back to Adil Rashid. Adil Rashid played limited overs cricket for England, I want to say in 2008 or 2009, was their best player in one game. I think he got 20 or 30 with the bat, maybe took a couple of wickets. I thought bowled quite well. And he got dropped afterwards. And I'm trying to remember the next time he even played for England. So off the top of my head, I just remember thinking to myself, what are you doing? Like, what's happening here? The forward arm one is interesting as well. I know that it probably looks worse because he was in domestic cricket for a long time. But I think, as I've said many times before, I think a more professional cricket culture would just not have let a player of his talent sort of be dropped and then disappear. There is the, I want to say Syed Anwar is another one who, does he get picked for a test, fails, they drop him, comes back, fails, they drop him, like for one test each. And they like missed. And then you see his numbers, I think, in domestic cricket, and you're like, oh, what on earth are you doing? Those are all ones off the top of my head. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Must be some other great ones. I still think Vinod Kambli. I understand that the middle order got quite stuffed after that, but I mean, he still made a lot of runs after he was dropped by India. I don't think you should be dropping a player of his talent for as long as they did. I suppose you could argue KP, being that he's already been brought up here. I'm trying to think of some others sort of from history or... there's obviously a lot of ones where there's other reasons why someone has been dropped or... there's I don't know the way to put it, but yeah, I think that they sort of disappear, but it must be someone else. I mean, I suppose Simon Harmer disappearing from cricket when they kind of knew roughly how good he was, at least, didn't they? There's a few. Let me see if I can find this one with Adil Rashid. Yes, Adil Rashid. Yeah, so he plays really good in that game against Australia. And then he gets tapped in one game, gets dropped, I think, comes back for two games against South Africa in 2009. And Adil Rashid's next game is in 2015. I mean, it's remarkable that there was that one. But yeah, I'm sure if I go through history, there must be some other great ones that I'm missing as well. I'm trying to think of one that's really, really obvious. I suppose Bradman got dropped. Mob says, any chatter about how Nathan McAndrew is considered either by Cricket Australia or the Aussie fans? Seems to be a bit of a Colin de Grandhomme, or if Boland could bat about him. A nagger's nagger, late bloomer, domestic cult boy, can whack it. I mean, I don't think he should ever play for Australia because he just helped the Vics lose their Shield final. I think that it's just probably that there's a lot of guys that Australia suddenly has that are a little bit like McAndrew. Like, I think different kinds of players, but obviously Cameron Green, you've now got Bo Webster, you have Aaron Hardy, you have Will Sutherland. I just feel that the problem with McAndrew is probably that there's a lot of guys that do that, and his bowling, as effective as it has been, is probably not quite up there. I think if he averages 32, 33 in first-class cricket, they might be like, it's worth it. Because if you think, Mob, they did play Andrew McDonald in Test cricket for a little while, so they have picked players kind of like McAndrew before. But I just think that he was a much stronger bat, and you could bat him at six, whereas McAndrew's probably at number eight in Test cricket at best, right? And you could argue he may not even be a better bat than Stark or Cummins or, you know, whoever else is in that area. Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN. Neil Howell says, as more research emerges on neurodiversity, I've read that sports like football have taken some tentative steps towards understanding how players think, process, and perform. Do you think professional cricket has any awareness of this, let alone a framework for supporting players? And given how much the game depends on concentration, pattern recognition, and managing pressure, do you think there are aspects of cricket that might actually suit neurodiverse minds? I think there's already studies that there are lots of sports that neurodiversity can help with. And, you know, I've obviously kind of started this by accident, writing about Benny Howell and ADHD. And I think since then, a lot of people have written, you know, about players and how they can be involved in all those sorts of things and how it can help. It can obviously hinder as well. And, you know, talked to Mitch Johnson about that before. But yeah, I do think, I mean, if you look at the great batters of all time, we didn't quite do a neurodiversity chapter in the book. But if you look at the great batters of all time, you know, we've already mentioned KP. I think he would certainly be on some kind of a spectrum. Steve Smith, you know, Bradman, like a lot of the guys at the top of that list would be on some kind of spectrums. And so there is, you know, it's, and it might be that pattern recognition as much as anything else, right? Is their ability to go, oh yeah, bang, 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 this ball's coming out, right? And so I do think a lot of the greatest batters of all time have that. I'm sure bowlers have different kinds of spectrums that they are also on. I've already mentioned Mitch Johnson and Benny Howell as two guys we know. But yeah, I don't think cricket's really ready for it. I think from my understanding, I don't want to out this person because I don't know if this book's out there, but I believe someone's writing a book about cricket and ADHD. I think that's right. If not neurodiversity itself, but I think it was about cricket and ADHD. And he was sort of saying that when he did the research, it felt like the boards were a long way behind. Anil says, what would be the three biggest companies by revenue for non-TV cricket media, in your opinion? And what would be the primary source for that revenue? It's kind of a bit tricky because when you say by revenue, because CricInfo and CricBuzz don't have a lot of revenue. So they're a little bit tricky. But yeah, it's CricInfo, CricBuzz, Dream 11. So Dream 11 would have been the biggest one and is now probably not. You would have had a lot of those other sort of, you know, so I suppose Dream 11 probably wasn't on your list, but now is because they're trying to be a cricket media company, I think, at the moment. They've certainly been active in the podcasting space from what I could tell in the last little while. But yeah, so CricBuzz makes a little bit of money off, you pay for an ad-free version of their app, but the vast majority of their money, I assume, is still from advertising. CricInfo's money is largely from advertising, but neither of those companies are fully monetized because they're tied into other bigger companies and they're part of larger political and business plays, right? The third biggest one, if you don't count Dream 11, is actually quite fascinating. It's probably someone like... don't know if you count Sportskeeda because they get there across so many sports now, but like maybe one of the cricket aggregators. I mean, cricket.com just went bust. I'm trying to think of something else. Cricket District probably isn't that big. It's one of the big problems. We basically have the two biggest cricket media companies are almost exactly the same as each other. And they go after the exact same market as each other. They don't really grow the game the way that we need it to or help with the coverage the way we need it to. Not that they're doing anything wrong, but just because they exist. And the third one is, yeah, not ideal. That's why we're starting Combox. We're hoping Combox will be the third one. Ajit says, I know you've talked multiple times about how forcibly trying to change the nature of a pitch makes it much worse than it is. But this somehow doesn't apply as strongly to Indian pitches. New Zealand beat India on absolute ranked Turner at Wankhede in a test. But in the IPL, they're known as a batting paradise. Similarly, Chepauk is supposed to be spin friendly in the IPL. But in a recent World Cup, they had an average score of 190. Yeah, so what I meant, Ajit, is the other direction. I mean, when you're trying to... it's very easy to make any pitch, most pitches in the world, batting friendly. You can't make them all so it's sexy batting. But you can make them so it's very hard to get wickets on them. Or... it's much easier to score runs on, right? That's not that hard. What I'm talking about is when you are trying to doctor a pitch, so to make it spin when it doesn't normally spin, or to make it seem way more than it ever normally seems, that's usually when you make things wrong. It's not when you're going the other direction. When you're going in the batting direction, it's not much of an issue at all. Gaji says, why is the IPL pitch prepared like highways? Also, why are there no fast bowlers in Indian domestic cricket, as bowling looks so pathetic in most teams? Yeah, I think that's a fair thing. I think we noticed that a little bit coming off that incredible run where India had, what, 5, 6, 7 seamers. It suddenly looks a lot more bare, even at the top level, let alone the level below. The answer to your first one is, I think the IPL just thinks that's the best way to get fans. I think for casual fans, they think they're more interested in that. I think, you know, we've seen the NBA and baseball try and get their scoring rates up at times. I think generally when you're running a league, you think that the best thing to do is to have higher scoring. then you realize probably after a period of time that people get bored of that and then you switch. But it's a fairly standard thing to do. Alice says, what do you think of the financial health of CA and ECB in the future? Can they remain independent of BCCI tours and IPO wealth and still thrive? This all depends on what you mean by thrive, Ali. And I think I've had this conversation with so many cricket people before where they're like, you don't know what it's like, Jared. We've got no money. And I went, no money compared to what? Like, what's your budget at the moment? 80 million a year? That's not no money, right? No money compared to what? Like, compared to most major sports in your country, you are in rude health. Compared to the BCCI, you have no money. But they have a 1.3 billion person marketplace. Like, why would you expect to be the same as them? So realistically, Cricket Australia and ECB, I think, are very wealthy as far as, you know, national bodies of sport is concerned. They're just not wealthy compared to the BCCI. And I think that's how I've always tried to frame it with these people from cricket boards of like, I think you're just thinking about this the wrong way, right? And you're in a space race where the other team has infinite money and you're hoping for Kickstarter donations. It doesn't make any sense. Like, you are making money. You are really professional. Do what you do best. And ECB and Cricket Australia could easily do that independent of BCCI tours and IPL owners coming in. The problem is that everyone wants more money, and that's what capitalism is, and that's how we end up in a situation where it's not enough. It's like, I don't know. I think there's a few other sports to be pretty happy with that. Adityan says, how hard will it be to teach the likes of Tushara and Pathirana to bowl a ball like a normal fast bowler, even if it's not international cricket level, say a straight ball, late 120s? For how Robbie played Malinga by intentionally moving his eyes to the umpire's chest, even that club cricket level ball would screw him, wouldn't it? How hard would it be to teach the likes of? Oh, okay. So you're saying that occasionally they bowl with a higher arm action. Yeah, I think they could. It's one of these things of, you know, having spent a lot of time with international bowlers over the last few years, what you realize is most international bowlers can bowl every delivery. All right. There's a couple. I remember Tamal Mills saying that he couldn't get the ball in his hand for the knuckle, right? And someone else saying that they could just never land a back of the hand slow ball. But most guys can bowl all deliveries. Can they bowl them at international level quality? Is the problem. So yeah, let's say Pathirana suddenly came up and bowled like at just a normal 125 kilometer an hour, but high arm action ball, right? He probably has to run in differently. He's probably not going to have his rhythm right. And he still needs to bowl it at a level that it isn't just like a club player bowling it down, because someone like Robbie is just going to work that out and get ready and whack it out the park. So it can't just be a nothing ball. There always has to be something on it. And I think that's really, really important. Like, I've seen guys at international level, I've seen guys in the IPL and other major franchises try balls that are club level balls, right? And they just do not work, because you've got to be able to like pull it off to a much higher level than that. Ian says, Bo Webster signed for Warwickshire from the start of the season until the end of July. Do you think that makes him more likely or less likely to play a big role in next year's Ashes? And as an aside, how much do the county stints help Australian fringe players? Yeah, I think it does. I think in the old days, Australia was a little bit more arrogant. I think they just thought they were better than England. And so they understood that playing in county cricket helped and everything. But I remember talking to selectors when I first started this, and they wouldn't even look at county form. And I'd be like, why would you not look at county form? That doesn't make any sense. That's where the games are going to be played, guys. And I think if you look now, things have changed quite a bit. And we have heard now that county form, you know, George Bailey specifically, and he will be potentially involved in that, is someone who's a much more holistic kind of guy, being like, no. Well, you can be informed in this and you can be informed in this. And so I do think it will play a part. How much do the stints help Australian fringe players? I think they help fringe players from all around the world. The thing about county cricket, more than anything else, is the amount of cricket that you play. Right, it's great that you go over and you play in specific ways, and you're as a professional that there's more pressure put on you and all these different things. But when it comes down to it, like, a lot of people will just say it's just the amount of cricket that you play over a short period of time that no other leagues around the world really do. Right, so I think that it makes you feel more like a professional. It makes you play under pressure a little bit more. You have to change between formats very quickly. You know, you're on the motorway the whole time. You have to look after yourself. I think, was it, I think in the book, Royal Driver might have talked about like how it basically grew him up as a person playing in county cricket, right? And so all these things, you're much more on your own in county cricket than you are in some of the other professional leagues, right? And so, again, you have to do things that you might not always have to do in other situations. So, yeah, I think it helps anyone and always has. It's been a great finishing school. There are other competitions that also would have been great finishing schools, but this one specifically, I think we've got so much evidence of that now. Adityan said, how hard will it be for the PSL to have a non-compete clause for the duration of the PSL? That players can't play professional level cricket elsewhere for the duration of the PSL. I did a short video on this. I don't see what the point of this is. You're just going to make the PSL a shitter league by not having as many overseas players available to you. Can they do it legally? I don't know. I'm not an expert in how things work in Pakistan. I mean, you know, maybe there is a way of doing it from a legal point of view. I would find it hard to believe, but I don't know about international contract law and sports law and all these sorts of things. But what I do know is about cricketers. And I think if you start to tell the cricketers that, they'll be like, well, then I won't play for you. I'll just wait and hope I get in the IPL or play some early season county cricket or get somewhere else. So I don't... You're creating a situation where you can only get players who are absolutely dead keen to play for you, which is fine, but that is going to narrow the amount of players. I would look at it more the way that European basketball looks at it, which is if someone's not in the NBA, they can come over. If we've got a contract with them, sometimes it can be nasty, but we have to accept that if someone gets offered an NBA contract, it's very hard. And you know, there are teams who have managed in European basketball to have contracts with people where I think sometimes the players haven't been able to leave the NBA, but a lot of players won't sign a contract for a European team without the possibility they can go and play in the NBA. Satchmo says, the best fast bowler of the 80s is probably a short list of Imran, Marshall, Garner and Hadley. Marshall took the most wickets, 323, not too bad, had a strike rate of 44, but an average of 19.91, higher than Imran of 19.12. My God. Imran's is ridiculous. Hadley's is 19.28. Can they be ranked, or is it so close that it is really a tie? I think you kind of have to go beyond just pure averages at a certain point there. I think you have to look at the fact that Garner bowled first change. I think you have to look at the fact that Imran played on some of the flattest pitches imaginable. I mean, huge advantage, reverse swing would be to him as well. You have to look at I would assume Hadley bowled a higher percentage of overs than Imran would have, and I would have thought than Marshall or Garner. I haven't quite signed the contract for harder bowling yet, but it looks like it is going to go ahead. These are the sorts of things where I would never stop with average here. I'd be looking at how you can use them, you know, when they're useful all the way through, maybe even against left-handers, right-hand, all these sorts of things. The more details, the better, I think, in this kind of situation. Off the top of my head, I kind of feel like it should be Marshall. But I think Imran and Hadley have great cases, and it's not that Garner has a terrible case, right? It's a fascinating question. Aravind says, in the game between RCB and SRH, Krunal just got two overs where he was expensive. Are you surprised he didn't go for his bouncer ball when he was getting thrashed in that second over? What would be a good pitch scenario and conditions to bring out the spinner's bouncer ball? Is it not a good ball just to get out of an over? I actually think, if anything, Aravind at that stage, he got a little bit experimental when he probably didn't have to. I'm not sure I would have been suggesting the bouncer ball. I'd have to talk to him about what the objective of it is and what kind of wicket helps it best. Do you want a pitch where you hit the ball into the surface and it slows down? Or do you want a pitch that hits the surface and skids on? And if it's in the middle of that, it's actually quite easy to score off. So my guess would be, in that situation, that he didn't think it was the right surface, or he just forgot to bowl it. But yeah, you'd almost have to talk to him and some of the other guys who've bowled it to be like, what kind of pitch or what kind of batter do you think is best for this delivery? James says, Julio Franco was pretty much a quintessential hall of very good MLB player. What set him apart, though, was that he simply refused to retire when others would have. He got cut from an NL team. He would play a season in Japan, Korea, or Mexico, then return to MLB. He played his last MLB game aged 48 in 2008, and his last minor league professional game aged 55. Does modern cricket have a Julio Franco? John Tracos might be the closest I can think of. I mean, it's probably a bit unfair on Wilfred Rhodes, I suppose, but he's the other guy that comes to mind. How old were Brad Hodge and Brad Hogg when they retired? 46, 47? I think I've told the story before. I don't think Hodgie will mind me telling it again. But when Hodge was coaching St. Lucia when I was the analyst, he kind of half jokingly said, I think I could actually help the team if I came out to bat now. If I came back and played now. And like, I think he was saying it kind of tongue in cheek, but I also think there was a part of him that was trying to see what my opinion would be of it. And I was like, you can't, you're a coach, you can't come back and play now. But I think that sort of shows that he still thought he could do a job at that level. And he would have been, 47, 48 probably by that point. So I think that tells you a lot about like a guy like him. So yeah, I think we've had a few of those sorts of players. I'm trying to think of any others sort of historically. Power would be one, I suppose, the spinner. Are there any other? There must be other older spinners who kind of make themselves available. Yeah. I can't think of that many others. There's, I mean, if you go back into, James, if you look at county cricket, there's a bunch of guys who have ridiculous, and Ranji, I think Ranji and County, I think they're the two that have some really, really long runs of players. So I suppose we've had a few of those sorts of guys. Ree says, how do the dynamics of a club cricket changing room differ from country to country? I mean, I haven't played club cricket everywhere, so I'm not an absolute expert on this. I suppose in Australia, club cricket was very much seen as like your chance to play a test match on the weekend quite a lot. Especially, you know, I can't speak for all states, but in Melbourne, all the teams I played for were pretty much like that. You know, it was get there early, do the warm-ups, be really serious, blah, 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 and then play as hard as you can. English cricket in the teams I've played for has been a lot more, let's have a bit of fun and try and win if we can. And so it feels very different from those two. But yeah, I'm not an expert on the other ones, mate. Abe says, in your opinion, what's the most common mistake that teams keep making in IPL auctions? I think age curves is one. I think teams still aren't factoring in age curves enough of when a player is about to hit a prime. I think bowlers are still undervalued. Quite a bit. I think if you were an average IPL team who's in the middle between mega auctions, I think you make a pretty big difference just by paying a bunch of bowlers some money and pulling yourselves back into playoff contention. Yeah, I'd say those are the two main ones. The other one is probably overreacting to a player based on hype. So a Venky would be one where I just think people... I think for whatever reason, people didn't look at the numbers enough to be like, well, what does this guy actually do for us? So I think there's been a bit of that of like people get really excited with a player and he sort of sticks around and it's like, well, what's his best usage? And the other one is picking all-rounders who don't actually help you in the IPL. So specifically what I mean by that is not that these players are bad all-rounders. So Jamie Overton is a perfect example of, I don't really know how you make it work, if that makes sense, from the perspective of, where is he going to bowl in an IPL team, right? So it's the and we've seen this with Sam Curran as well, and we've seen this with other all-rounders too. So you've got an all-rounder, great. With Andre Russell, we know exactly what he does, right? We know where he's going to bat, and he's going to give you a plus ability to come in anytime from the 13th, 14th over onwards. We realize that he's going to bowl. He can bowl one or two in the middle and probably one at the death, which gets you to three overs and you know his usage with the bat. With a lot of the all-rounders, I think they don't really understand how they're going to use them. They're just looking for the phrase all-rounder, I think, too often. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything to me. How many overs does this guy bowl and how many balls are they going to face? And how are you going to use them in your team? Like, when, I think it was when Punjab tried to base the team around Sam Curran. That's not how you use Sam Curran. With Sam Curran, he's at his absolute best when you have a really strong team and he's the icing on the cake. Not, he shouldn't be the central nervous system of a team. You don't want him to have to bat at number four. You don't want him to have to bowl four overs a game. I think teams make that mistake a lot. That's not, none of these are particularly IPL mistakes either. A lot of these are wider mistakes. Mob says, with the angle of release point becoming so important in modern cricket, paying attention to the back foot of pace bowlers is an increasingly relevant concern for umpires. How on earth do they do it? And are they in fact doing it? No, quite often now they're not, and just because it's been done off the TV. But yeah, if you go back to Twitter, I reckon 10 or 12 years ago, Mob, you'll see that I was calling back foot no balls over and over again, and umpires just weren't doing it. And it's really hard. Generally, and I haven't done a huge amount of umpiring, but generally when you've done umpiring, you do realize when someone's close and you start to keep more of an eye on it. But yeah, my understanding of modern cricket is more often than not, it's done from the TV now. Anil says, is there any reason live stuff on the channel like IPL watch-alongs are not also live stream on the Patreon app? Something for audio listeners only would be cool, like old school radio broadcasts. Kudos to the really insightful and funny watch-alongs. Are way more interesting than TV commentary. Thank you very much. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, we're doing live watch-alongs every day of the IPL. We're hoping, at the moment, we're just doing them from our houses, but we've got some big plans for later in the tournament. Fortunately, there was a war and things got a little bit changed with where we were going to be recording things and everything else, but we're still working on it. Look, things like putting it on Patreon and everywhere else are like, we would love to do that. We want to get to a point eventually where we are doing a radio broadcasts, right, online. But we just don't have the manpower now to even push everything out. I don't even think we've made many clips from the watch-alongs yet. These things all need money, and that's the thing that we haven't done. We're in the middle of a friends and family raise at the moment. We've got a bigger raise on the back end. We're talking to sponsors about potentially very big deals, but nothing's happened, right? And so until it does, we're just trying to, before I came on this show, I was literally messaging you going, does anyone know anyone who can come on the live today? Because the first hour, we have a black hole. Ajit says, people were already calling for Chakravarti's exit midway through the World Cup, which was ridiculous. Granted that this is just the first game of the IPL, but he looked lost against MI again. Do you think it's just mental fatigue and burnout after playing so much in T20s? We've seen this in other players in the past. Look, I think with him, we have seen at times teams kind of work out his new method after a period, because he's not like, what he does is basically try and stay one and a half steps ahead of everyone, and occasionally people catch up. I think a big issue is he doesn't seem to be hitting his length as consistently, but that also could be that people are now like, okay, off this length you play this shot and off this length you play this shot. It's very possible that's the case. I'm not going to judge him too harsh on the first game because I think every spinner got tap in that game. So I'd kind of move that one to the side at the moment, but I'm very interested in what happens in the next five games in total, right? Like very, very interested. But he's such a smart player that even if it doesn't work this season, I'd kind of still back him to work it out again and come back. Ali says, with the PSL and IPL running concurrently and both refusing double headers, it fixes the issue of neutral fans to watch an alternate game if one of them is getting boring. Would you be surprised to see an uptick in both leagues overall due to the double headers? I hadn't thought about that. It probably helps the PSL more, I would have thought, right? If you're just a cricket fan who's bored of the game and, you know, all three games so far have been boring, maybe you will just turn onto a different channel. I'm not sure in the IPL it matters at all, but in the PSL I could see, but I hadn't thought of it. It's a very good point. The best thing that can happen to the PSL is one-sided IPL games. Satchmo says, can South Africa be mentally coached to perform better in white ball knockout games given how they performed in the World T20? I think, Satchmo, if you go through my career, I don't think the issue is, I think the issue is how they play. I think the issue is quite often the setups of their teams. I don't think you can have a generational mental psychosis passed down. Now, maybe you can to a certain extent, if you enter it, you must be like, but I know a lot of young South African players are like, I'm the one who's going to break this, and they haven't. So they've been pretty confident on it. I just think that there is at a certain point, what we have with that is that the way they play limited overs cricket, I'm not sure it always works really hard for knockouts, that they're always batting a little bit slower than I think they can. They're always making conservative decisions. And I think once you get to those, you know, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, I think there is an element, and India had this only a couple of years ago. I think there is an element of the other team's just going to swing haymakers at you. And so you might as well be swinging haymakers back. And I don't think that's how South African cricket specifically works. So I don't think that's a mental thing. I think that's more a tactical thing. And also maybe the kind of players that they're coming up with. So that's where I would look at it anyway. Let's have a quick break. And then after this break, we will come back with more Wagon Wheel. Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumpa turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting. All right, we've got a couple of super chats in here. Oh, Jessica's back. Always nice to do a live when Jessica's awake. Thank you very much. Shreyas says, with India's batting depth, is it better for IPL teams to focus on 2 to 3 world-class international bowlers or rounders and then build a strong Indian batting core? As a general rule, Shreyas, I always think the best thing you can do is buy local bowlers who are good in any auction in any league in the world. That's my first thing if I'm doing consultancy for teams. It's the first thing I tell them every time. Bowlers are undervalued, and generally local bowlers are undervalued. So maybe you can't get the top 4 best local bowlers, but maybe you can get the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and now you've got a really good attack. So I would still be looking at that. But yeah, I think at the moment, maybe what Rajasthan is doing makes pretty good sense. RM says, how are white and test bowling skills different and why? Test bowling skills, largely you are bowling the same ball over and over and over again, which is a very hard thing to do, especially when you're trying to bowl it as hard as you can or spin it as much as you can. But generally you're bowling the same ball over and over and over again with very, very subtle variations of that. You know, it's rare to see someone who comes in and bowls 3 big hooping out swingers and 2 big hooping in swingers, right? Vast majority of bowlers bowl their stock ball, which is one of their best balls, in a position that is uncomfortable for as long as possible. White ball bowling is much more variable, right? White ball bowling, you are probably bowling more width than you would in test cricket. You're really trying to do different things with your width and your angles. And you're also probably, you might bowl a Yorker one ball, a bounce to the next ball, a length ball after that, a back of the length ball. It's very rare that a test bowler will ever do that. So you're basically having to come in cold, as in your body isn't grooved to bowling the same length over and over again, and you have to nail each individual length, which is why the ball is splattered around a little bit more in white ball cricket by the bowlers, just because it's really hard to do that. You also probably need real variations, right? So a slower ball is a huge variation from a seam ball for a quick bowler, a leg spinner and a wrong-un, and you know, a carom ball, all these sorts of things that we see. These are genuine variations, which again, you don't see as much of in test cricket. So test cricket is finding one particular skill and then varying it and changing it just in little bits to get a wicket. And T20 cricket is changing complete strategies. You know, the way you bowl with the power play is completely different to how you bowl in the middle, completely different to how you bowl in the end. Everything is different, almost from a ball-to-ball situation, from a period of the game situation. So some of the skills transfer, but you're not even using them in the same way anyway, right? Blue Eagles says, Acquired Pod says, auction ensures that you have to pick most of your squad transparently within the cap. There's only room for rigging with your retainees. Yeah, I think the Acquired Pod, if I was going to... I did try and reach out to the guys before I did that video, and maybe now that Peace is out, they might get back in touch. But that's the one thing they got massively wrong, because I think they thought the salary cap / auction was very transparent, whereas that, we know that it's been rigged before and that no one really listens to the cap anyway. So, there is a lot more going on at that level already. So I think that I can understand why they would see it from the outside as a good idea. I think once you actually know a little bit more about how the sausage of the IPL is made, you realize it's not quite at the level you want it to be. Blue Eagle says, ranked by T20 ceiling, Abhishek, Vaibhav, Jaiswal. Well, at the moment, if you don't have Vaibhav at number one, you're going nuts. Abhishek Jaiswal, I think. I still think Jaiswal would be a fantastic T20 player. I just don't think he's worked out exactly what he wants that to be at the moment. Siddharth says, finally caught a wagon wheel live in the Combox era. Are you all doing great work? Keep it up. Thank you very much. Question about Vaibhav Sachin parallel. How much similarity do you see between the two? And do you feel he benefits from modern ICT? I don't see many parallels between them other than the fact they were both young and really good. Yeah, so they're not very similar players in any way. Maybe outside the fact they both have ridiculous eyes. Very different kind of footwork, very different kind of technique, very different kind of way of going about it. Do you feel he benefits from modern ICT? He might. Robbie told a great story about how he's still going out and getting ice creams. I think that if he'd come through the previous Indian generation, and this isn't just India, this was a lot of countries. But I think if he came through that previous sort of regime of international cricket, your talent was really important, but you had to learn the professional part yourself. As we just said with Rahul Dravid, right? He went off and played county cricket. And I think a lot of players are from around the world learned professionalism themselves. I don't think you need to do that anymore. Now, there's still levels of professionalism, right? There's, you know, never eating a carb ever again or whatever, you know, Virat Kohli's doing, that kind of level. There's Jake Weatherald spending 8 hours a day bettering his cricket levels. But you see what I mean, where those things are much more easy and much more easy and understandable when it comes to now. Whereas I think before, we lost a lot of great cricketers just because they didn't know what to do, right? Like it's hard. So I do think modern cricket makes it modern sport really makes it a lot easier for people to be professional who don't have the tools to naturally be professional themselves. Whereas Sachin's great standout thing, if you look at Sachin and Bradman compared to Sobers specifically, Sobers was as talented as Tendulkar, but clearly wasn't professional, right? Like, I don't think anyone's arguing that he was a professional. He was out partying all night and all sorts of things. And Bradman, look how professional Bradman was in an era where it wasn't even a thing we thought about. And so I think that thing will still be, you'll still have the ability to show that. And, you know, someone like, you know, Djokovic or Kohli or whoever you want to put in that level, you know, to go a little bit higher. But I think in that past, there was a bigger jump you could have up by just being that sort of person. I think now that systems are just much better in place to teach people what to do. Siddharth says, why is the NBA media so shit with the whole Luka MVP debate? Is he suffering from the old Kobe narratives or is it something different? I don't get America. I'm not really sure what you mean. I kind of zone out on MVP because I think MVP is one of those things that it's the sort of thing we're missing in cricket, which is the constant conversation of who's doing best in this year. And I do think we miss it a lot, that American sports do really well. But having lived through, 7 years of Nikola Jokic just being incredible and having the ridiculous stories about why he shouldn't be an MVP, like that he's stat padding, like he's the least interested in stats of any player I've ever followed in any sport. You know, and so I think that it's a very narrative driven thing. And I don't really know what's going on with Luka. I think I've watched a fair bit of basketball, maybe slightly less this year than the last couple of years, but I watch a lot of basketball. I think if you look at what the Lakers have done, I think Luka's had an incredible year. So I think he's got a good chance of being it. But in general, I'd rather no Lakers players ever get it. Andy says, has cricket popularity in England increased from 03? 03? It's an interesting one. I think cricket still has issues in England. You know, fundamentally, class is the biggest issue that England has at all times. And I think that plays a huge part in it. And they haven't really, they lost a whole generation of West Indian second generation, third generation kids, which they didn't need to lose. They're probably, it doesn't look like they're going to lose the second generation of Pakistani, Indian, Bangladeshi, Sri Lankan kids. But who knows if they get the third generation. I think it feels pretty comfortable and popular at the moment. It's just one of those things, again, of when you compare it to football, it's a long way behind. And it does feel like it's a bit like India and cricket, right? That, you know, there's such a gap between the first and the second sport that even when cricket's doing good, I'm not sure it quite works. But I think the biggest issue is the vast majority of English people don't know who is in their cricket team. And until that fundamental, until it seeps back into everyone at least knows who the players are, you know, the main seven or eight players are, I think that's a big issue. Because it means you're playing to the same markets over and over again. And fundamentally, England has played to the upper class markets, the richer people, right? Which means that there are always going to be more poorer people than there are richer people. So at a certain point, they're playing to the wrong demographic. Red says, would franchise like Red Bull Cricket be viable? Yeah, definitely. I've talked about it a lot. I wouldn't say it's ever been close, but it's been planned. It's been schemed. Players have even been talked to about it. It's definitely a possibility in the future, and it would definitely be viable. It's just, you would have to do it really well, and who knows if it would. Siva says, do you think the ICC should lift off the saliva ban? No, I don't really think we should be licking. I don't think we should be putting spit on cricket balls. There's also, I think a lot of players think it does a lot more than it does as well. The best way to get reverse swing is to have the ball dry, right? It does help you with little bits, like when the leather sort of cracks a little bit and you can smooth over that bit. But I don't know. I just don't think we need to spit on cricket balls, guys. Shreya says, every year the IPL wants to play games in Dharamshala and Guwahati. Isn't it better to just give them their own franchise teams? I mean, is Dharamshala going to have a franchise team? Just, is it a big enough market? That would be my only question. I mean, having been up there, there aren't that many people who've seen, in a country that has a lot of people, I felt like there wasn't a lot of people up there. I think it's always a possibility. Look, eventually there's going to be a lot more teams, and so they will get franchises. But yeah, I get your point, but I don't think they're going to be the next two teams in either. Aditya says, is this the black ball behind you, the same one you used in the death of a gentleman? No. So two blackboards are used in Death of a Gentleman. This is how much I love blackboards. So we first started, I painted a wall in my old office in my old house, which if you go back, you can see me and Andy Zaltzman used to do videos in my house. So you can kind of see it there. I think it was a red background, but it was red chalkboard paint. And we did heaps of stuff there. I think we shot something for that for Death of a Gentleman. We certainly did promos in there. I can't remember if anything from the movie went in there or if it was cut, only because I can't remember every frame of the movie. But we certainly filmed in there. The problem with that was when we were trying to do the big scene with the big thing, we actually didn't have, that room wasn't that big, so we couldn't get the camera far enough back. We also couldn't get the blackboard big enough. And I think it was a height thing as much as anything. That was not a very high ceiling place. And so I think Sam found a pub that had a huge blackboard on the wall, and we went in there like early one morning and did it there. But yeah, like, I mean, obviously, the reason I have blackboard in my old office and I had a whiteboard in my last office, and now blackboards, I've got two blackboards in here at the moment, is I use them for ideas. So it's less to do with the actual filming of things, although we've ended up using them quite a bit, but it's more to do with the idea. So I even have like plastic strips on my windows so I can use my windows to write up things. So I like to have something that I can just run over to when I've got like five or six ideas in my head at the same time and just go bang, 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 bang. And then I've got it and I can use it. And then over the years, we realized that I think there was some American content creators who were using a whiteboard, and I was like, oh, wait, I've got a whiteboard in my office. I should do some videos on that, which actually make it easier for us to visualize some things. And then we then started to come up with more and more. The last one we did on the blackboard, obviously, we're getting to another level where we're adding more and more sort of details and everything else to it. But yeah, I think because of the dyslexia, it really helps me to get the thing out visual so I could see it. So if you have a look, there's a Medium article I wrote, which I think has some of the blackboard stuff in it. So if you look at the test cricket book, I have the way I plan the book on that blackboard. I think we've got something from for the Art of Bowling. We've got that. We used a blackboard for the Virat Kohli book. Death of a Gentleman, I would have used the whiteboard, blackboard for a lot of the smaller pieces that I've written over the years would have often started in those things. I've even got like little things like, I don't know, what's this? Like a notebook / whiteboard thing. So for me, it's really important to just be able to get the thing down in that pattern that I have. And then blackboards look really cool. Like, so we haven't done much with this one. This one has just been here And we don't even really know what to how to use it, just because I can't actually stand at it when we record here because the camera's in the wrong position. So I think we'll probably get a similar blackboard to this, but on the other side. And then we'll not even use it even more. But yeah, I think it helps me sort of understand things a little bit clearer, and it looks cool sometimes. Andy says, what made Wacker so devastating at his peak? He was legitimately the fastest bowler in the world, and he was swinging it. He could swing it in both directions, in fact. He was so quick. And, you know, I talked to so many people who faced him who just went, if he bowled straight, he would have been impossible. And he was swinging it as well. And there's a great Peter Roebuck story. I think he might have written about it, but I've heard him talk about it as well, where Peter Roebuck is playing and he's facing Wacker Yunus, and they've got like four slips in place and he can't lay bat on him. Outswing, outswing, outswing. And the keeper or the captain just goes, eh. And Wacker goes, yep, yep. And they take out a slip and they put in a leg slip and they put in two people behind square on the leg side. And then he just starts doing it the other way and trying to bowl him because he couldn't hit the outswingers. There aren't many players in the history of cricket who can bowl outswing and inswing on demand of that quality, and certainly not at that pace, right? And I you know, the ability to hit the stumps and the outside edge just was brilliant. And then he was pretty accurate for someone as quick as him. If you compare him to Shoaib Akhtar, he was really, really accurate, Wacker Yunus, right? I'm trying to think of someone else. Yeah, like legitimately accurate, maybe like an Unric Nokia level of accuracy, which you don't often get from guys who are the fastest bowler in the world, right? Like, you know, so there's a lot there. And he just had this incredible waist. It's like a toy soldier waist, like, you know, like an action figure. Incredible to watch. Sidhav says, how good is cricket as a sport to set up a business around versus other major sports like the NFL, NBA, football, and tennis? Well, the great thing about cricket is that people have run it so poorly that there are plenty of business opportunities to set up. So it's not hard for me to find a white space. The bad thing is that because it's been run so poorly, no one thinks you can make any money off cricket. I've got a friend who has quite a prominent job in cricket, and he sends me a message about once every 2 months that just says, why do we choose this sport? Maybe it chose us. This is Wagon Wheel. We'll be back in a little while for the watch along. And you can see us there. Not me, but you can see other people. You can see faces there. Thank you to everyone, and we'll see you again very soon. More on Combox. Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Ruckshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.